was out of our room. Baba putting his finger to his lips and saying, come on, come on, Sarup, let's go. So we all quietly pussyfooting along with Baba into Margaret's room. And then he disorganized everything. The thing that were here, we put here, and the thing that were on the bed, we put on the table, and the thing that were table. And then Baba even put a little pebble in her dad's shoe, something that would make her notice and realize that something was different. Then we all came away because Margaret was coming, and we waited, peeking round the corner, but not a peep out of Margaret. She didn't notice, and if she noticed, it didn't make any difference. In the end, it was so funny that Baba and we went back, and Baba was practically asking, how is everything, Margaret? Oh, Baba, fine, thank you, sort of, you know. But then she knew, and she laughed. She'd always laugh. Especially if somebody was sleeping in the afternoon. One of our orders for many years was no lying down in the afternoons or no lying down in the daytime. Especially when we were up on the hill, those years of absolutely cloistered life up on the hill from 32 to 36, 37. No matter what one's health was, in the daytime we didn't lie down. But then Baba, those phases of orders changed, you know, that. But he didn't like people resting in the afternoons, really. Especially when you knew he would be coming. So I still remember when he'd come in the afternoon and somebody would be lying down asleep. Baba would again put his finger to his lips. And then he'd take off his handkerchief from his pocket, twist one end of it a bit, and slowly drop it over from the head to the slightest tip of the handkerchief touched the tip of the nose, very lightly. And that person would go, twitch the nose, thinking it's a fly, and make all kinds of faces. And we mustn't laugh aloud, we do that. And after a while, again, and then that person would do this. And after the fourth time, that person would get so angry, and find Baba there. And then such laughter.
Money. During those times when you'd be there, when was your schedule free enough to allow time to lie down? Can you say something about what the schedule was like in terms of what you had to do every day?
You mean for
in the 30, sort of in the same time zone when you're up on the hill?
Yeah.
How many things you had to do?
Oh, it was nothing you could put down like that, because as I say, in life with Baba, doing was just as important as not doing. You see, there were so many of the orders was not to do this, not to lie down, not to get angry, not to eat this, not to go out when you feel like it, not to be in the sun, even if it's just stepping out. There were so many of the nots that has been very much in life with Baba. And it's that which you cannot write about, you cannot boast about. It's not an achievement. As a matter of fact, it's a non-achievement. It's erasing rather than adding. And Baba was very good at that. But whatever it was no matter how little the things were that we had to do, say at 10 o'clock, I had to take this particular tonic for myself. At 9 o'clock, I had to remember to do this, tell this to Mara. Or all these little, very tiny things. Nothing that, as I say, you can boast about. But just as important as any order of Baba's, which kept you absolutely occupied all the time. Your mind occupied with Baba. Because it's Baba. Baba wants you to do this. Baba wants you to do this. Baba will now come. Baba. All the time. It was a fantastic meditation that was so continuous. And it's these little things. And as I always say, that you must bless little problems. Bless little things. Because the little problems keep the big problems away. We had no room for any big problem. We had just these little things all the time that that Baba gave equal importance to as anything that was big. The elephants and the mosquitoes, as long as they're from Baba, you had to give it equal attention. You had to uphold it equally, you know. So, like, and then the outlets, because our life with Baba was very strict. It was not easy, that I would say. But we were free to leave if we wanted to. But as Erich always says, we exercised our freedom to become his slaves. And all we wanted to do was to be with Baba. The only ambition, the only thing in life was to be with Baba. So there would be the little outlets, although we couldn't go out of that east room, which hasn't even windows. But Baba would take us out of the rooms, and we would play badminton with Baba. Little things. We had this pet chum. We would look after that, make the little garden in there, do the cooking, the washing, all the little things that kept you constantly in line with Baba's ways of. But nothing that, as Nadine said one day, when something happened, and she and Nurina, the princess and the countess, had a little difference. It's bound to. We were, as I said, all individuals. So many women together. But the funny part is, that the Westerners and Easterners didn't have so many differences between them, but among themselves. Easterners among themselves and Westerners among themselves. More like that. It was barely ever that a problem came up between the Easterner and the Westerner. But, what happened was that because it was very difficult to get anything independently, you never got anything from the bazaar or the market or the store, anything you wanted. Whatever were the needs, they had to be written on a piece of paper by a particular person who goes round, and it was given to Baba. And then Baba would see that it went to Masi, the gatekeeper, who would then give it to the bazaar man, one of the men mandalis, who never came up to even near the gate, but, you know, outside Mehrabad gate where there's that tank up till there. And then, so when Baba would look at this, he would sometimes say, "What is this? You all had this last week. Who needs this? If there was ever a luxury or if there was any repetition." And Baba said, "What's happening? Shoe polish? What do? Eat the shoe polish?" You see, things like this. So what had happened was that Narina and Nadine were sharing a tin of shoe polish. Now, according to one's nature, one of them, Narina was so used to her way of life in the world, so she'd take a blob of the shoe polish, blah, 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 you see, and we all polished our own shoes, of course, and forgot to put the tinfoil back, which, of course, dried up the shoe polish. So when Nadine, who came to use it very carefully, take just a dab and brush more, she finds that this has all gone dry. So, of course, there's a friction. Baba brings it out, as usual. They think Baba doesn't even know. Outwardly. But when everybody are gathered, everybody seems to look normal, but Baba says to Nadine, what's the matter? "Oh, nothing, Baba. Come on, out." In his own masterly way, he brings that out. And then he lets it all come out. And then he says, "Now forget it." At the first injunction, forget it. You see, even before the forgiving, the forgetting is very important. Forget it. And now embrace it, each other. They both stood there, and we're all looking at them silently and promising ourselves we'll never, never be in such a situation, ever, ever. We're going to be very careful and holding our breath because neither of them is moving. Baba says, "What is this?" I said, "Embrace. What's happening?" So Nadine puts up a hand as if lead weights had been fixed to it, you know. The moment she does that, Narina puts both her arms out. and then rest. So in the evening, when we were walking, having a walk in the garden, Nadine and myself, what disturbed Nadine was that how I wish it had been about something spiritual, about something beautiful, about, you know, something, as she was looking up at the stars and the moon, you know, something worth it. But a shoe polish, said Nadine. Shoe polish? I said, Nadine, Baba does not neglect even the tiniest thing. Even the littlest things serve him. The shoe polish simply served Baba to tell you what he wanted to say. But in those days when it was very, very strict, the men have always been different, separate from the women, mainly, always. In Mehrabad, for instance, the men were down the hill and we were up. So even afterwards in 1937, when the Western women came from Nasik to be with the Eastern women for visits during the day, even then they knew that how strict it was. You must not mention any man's name when they were talking with us. No man's name should be mentioned or anything like that. And Delia was talking to Mara, knowing Mara loved horses, and she was talking about, and she said, about some cowboys. And the moment she said, cowboys, she said, oh dear, and put her hand on her lips, and she said, oh I mean cowgirls. And Mara and we all laughed. Even later, when that phase was over, with Baba, it was always changing according to his work. So even later on, when it was less of that, I still remember when we had to refer in any story or any talk or any conversation to Anavaz's husband, Anavaz Dharachandji. Husband is Nariman Dharachandji. So we would say, Mr. Anavaz, no? Really, women's lib, as you might call it. Like we could say, Mr. Barber, Mr. Dart, you know. Where were you, Maxine, in 1952 when we were in England? No, but you were in London?
Yes, I must have been in London.
Beaver. Outside of Buckingham Palace, you know, this young man in uniform with a beaver hat and the strap under his lip, his hand. Because I was rather disappointed in looking at Buckingham Palace because we couldn't see much of it except the walls and way up inward there. With the top of the palace, and all the windows seemed closed, so there was nothing thrilling about it. But as we were walking by on the pavement past Buckingham Palace, outside the gate was this boy, this beaver, I believe you call him, standing there because he had this beaver hat, and looking very erect and rigid and straight and staring ahead, and as if nobody existed. He didn't know of our existence. And I was intrigued. So I walked slower than the others in order to loiter behind. And I went along past him, and I looked very wistfully at him, nothing doing. He wasn't responding in any way, staring ahead as if he were made of china. Then after I took a few steps, I whirled round quick and saw that he was looking our way. He turned his head. And I said aloud, gotcha, my boy. Blushed and looked straight. Oh, yes, the London Bobby. I was dying to see a London Bobby. Oh, so, and I didn't know how. We were all the time with Baba. It isn't as if I could go on my own and go look at a London Bobby. But so happened that when we were going in a car driven by Minta, Delia's sister, to Anna Hathaway's cottage, and we were passing those beautiful cottages, thatched cottages with the clematis climbing on it, all my memories of England, because we have been educated in English schools, you see. So it all came back very warmly. And then somehow she wasn't sure of the road at one point. So she stopped the car, and a bobby came up to the car to ask what was wrong. I almost fainted. I couldn't believe it. A bobby, a real bobby, right up to the door that I could see so close. Then, later what happened is, we went to Madame Tussaud, and Delia was leading us. We were like little chicks, you know. Delia, our dear hen, was, you know, taking us along. And inside is the staircase in the house that leads you up to the floor above in Madame Tussaud. There's still more. So on the landing, when, what do you call it? When the stair goes like this and then it goes like that. It's a landing, yeah. On it was a waxwork bobby. Now, you know, we're not supposed to touch any men or anything. And Delia was really taking care of us, not only showing us things, but saying that we were all right. I walked up to that bobby, and I touched his hand, and I shook hands with him. And Delia couldn't believe it. Oh, Moni, what are you doing? Oh, can you? And I sort of shrugged. I mean, if I want, I can do. But once I knew that she was being fooled, you know, fooling herself, rather. And then when she realized it, she was telling everybody about it the whole day. And the parks, the Richmond Park, and the Thames with the swans on it. It was very lovely. And I remember by the Thames, there were these little places to eat. And Delia took us there, and we were shown the menu. And I chose rabbit stew. And Delia was saying, but that's very ordinary. That's what, you know, just the poor people eat. And I said, I don't mind. I want to show off someday and say, oh, yes, I know what rabbit is like because I've had it. So there was that. And the food at the Rubens Hotel was surprisingly good. All this myth about English cooking was, you know, swept away. Wonderful food. I was given silence during that period by Barbara. So although we were in the Rubens Hotel, I could only talk with Baba in the room because Baba was confined to bed up because of the accident. But we went downstairs to eat in the hotel. And Delia would be with me too. Sometimes Charmin would be with me. So when I would go down, the lift boy, the little page boy, he knew I didn't speak. But he wanted, I could see in his face that he wanted some excitement. Perhaps to go home and tell his brothers or something. He'd say, which floor, miss? And he knew very well which floor, because I was doing it all the time. I'd always point out three fingers. And he'd say, yes, miss. And his face would be pink with pleasure. But when I would go into the dining hall, there was the head waiter. He had a coat like swallow's tails, and he had a hearing aid, and he looked very correct, very nice. And he would immediately come to me when I entered, although there were others. He would come to me and conduct me to a table. And he would say, now, miss, he said, while the others were making fun of me, the other waiters, I heard one of them say, blimey, she said, blimey, she can hear, but she can't talk. Blimey, she can hear, but she can't talk. That means, you know, because I should really be dumb and deaf, but I wasn't deaf. I could hear. So he would tell me, the head waiter, now I'll read out the menu, miss, and you just nod your head when you want what you want. I hadn't the faintest idea what the dishes were. I didn't know what the names meant. They were very grand names. So I sort of played a tic-tac-toe around, like, I told Baba, I count six, then I count four, and then I'll do that. Whatever it was, it worked. Because every time I nodded my head, he would tick that, and those things were fabulous. Oh, every dish was so good that once when Charmin was with me, she said, you order money. But I could say, you, no, no, she said, because then we'd share that dish. And she said, ooh, what is this? Don't ask me. And one day, Delia had a ginger beer. And she said, and would you like a ginger beer, Marnie? And I said, yes, nodded. So she ordered a ginger beer for me. It was a mug, a real mug, you know, like you see in old English pictures of Dickens and stories that we'd read. And it was foaming, nice, frothy things. Eh? And he put it on the table. And Delia took out a shilling and plonk. Oh, it was thrilling. And I had that ginger beer. It was so good.
You weren't talking because you weren't supposed to talk to men? Why weren't you?
No, Baba just gave me silence. Just the thing with me. I could talk with him. But on my trip in Switzerland and England, up to Karachi, I couldn't talk. That was the... Sometimes they were very funny situations. Because there was a time when we were in a hotel... And I could have talked. I would have liked to have talked because Charmin, who could talk, had got the fit of the giggles, and Delia, who could talk, was too excited. So, and I was trying to say, but I couldn't talk. So here are the three, like the three monkeys that you see pictures about. You see, and so a situation like that would be very, very funny situations would come up because. So what happened in Switzerland, for instance? We were eating outside. Baba and Mera, meals were served in there because they were very badly hurt. I mean, they didn't walk. But we sat under the beautiful big tree that was in the compound of Heidi's home where we stayed in Switzerland and Locarno. And Gisela and Max had come over doing the cooking and the others came over, Irene below and... Who else? Yeah. And Anita and Roger and all of them. So in the evening when we would sit out to eat, Delia didn't know that the Swiss could make a meal out of a sweet dish. And what with the budget and everything, what Gisela would do for the evening meal, they cooked delicious meals for us, I must say. But for the evening, sometimes there would be just this apple dish. There were little apples that would fall from these trees that were in the grounds. So we'd pick them up. I'd pick them up along with the other children of Gisela. And she'd make this dish. So this huge pot of delicious apple would be on the table. Sweet dish. And that was the supper. And Delia couldn't understand that, of course. So here we were seated. Our plate was on it. I'd taken some of this sweet and was eating. Charmin was eating, but Delia hadn't put anything on her plate. And we were talking, and Heidi came and said, Delia, some of this? No, thank you, Heidi. Not now, thank you very much. And I couldn't talk. I was trying. I was hoping somebody would tell Delia, this is it. Delia, this is the supper. If you say not now, you're not going to get anything else. This is it. So she kept pushing it off because she thought it was dessert, you know. And she said, not now, thank you very much. And this went on, and I was helpless. In the end, I tried, and I did induce Charmin to be able to tell Delia that this is not dessert, this is food, supper. So Delia, what, said Delia? Oh, I can't understand it, she said. And then she said, well, she took some of that. Not even a salty biscuit, she said. I can't. In the meantime, Heidi comes over. Delia, oh, thank you very much. Yes, it's very delicious. Yes, Heidi. No, no more, thank you. And the moment that she'd go, at least some cheese, I can't understand it. And the third time she said, no wonder the Swiss are so fat. I don't want to break her, but that's the, you know. And I was laughing at the poor Delia had never had such an experience before because she thought this was dessert, you see. And then the next day they all laughed about it. But they can, you know. I mean, the Swiss can make a meal out of a sweet thing. Because here, when Baba would distribute some sweets that would come sometime, you see, with Baba, there was fast office. So if somebody wanted to send a poor Mundli something, they would, of course, send it to Baba with his permission, and Baba would then distribute whatever it was with his own hands to each of us. So there would be this Indian sweet, which we ourselves are not very fond of, actually, not too much. So Baba would give this sweet all at once, at a time, which could be a plateful. Our problem, immediate problem, was where to put it so that the ants don't get at it. And we'll eat a little bit of it every day. Not Irene. There was the plate, and she finished it. That was her supper. She didn't eat anything else, but they could eat that, you see. And for us, for days, it would be in that tin box, and by the time we got round to it, I think you'll want to be seen. Mary? Have you seen Mary? I think you'll be seen. At least the women will.
He has gathered from Bob.
Thanks.
Say it
again.
Without your knowledge, without your knowledge, Baba always put the answer in one's head, just as he wants. I'm telling you now about this food thing. While Jim Meyer is here and before he goes out to play tennis or baseball or volleyball. Also, through any little thing, how Baba can work on one, how he can handle a situation and take full control of it without your knowledge, without your knowing it. He makes you continue to be at home and really feel that you have done something. This was in Guru Prasad, when Baba gave darshan. At the back of the Guru Prasad premises, and those huge pandals, shamianas were built, where his lovers gathered by the thousands and thousands on the days when Baba said, I will give darshan. So one of the darshanis was Yogi Sudananda Bharati. You must have seen him in a number of pictures of that period, Baba sitting in his chair on the desk and the Rani on one side of him seated on the floor and Yogi Sudananda Bharati with the yellow robe. He was a yogi and very devoted to Baba. So he was seated there. And now, before he came, he wrote a letter to some of the Mandali that, I think it was to Erich, saying that he was coming. Could his arrangement be made somewhere in a hotel, please? And you know that he only ate nuts and fruits and milk, nothing else.
Honey.
You know, honey, honey.
Milk, honey, fruits, and nuts.
Well, you see? And so, see to that. See that, well, I mean, he just wanted us to make a reservation for him in some hotel where his diet would be supplied according to his needs and his custom. So Baba said, something must be done, arranged for him. So he entrusted the yogi's comfort to G.S.N. Murthy of Kharagpur. G.S.N. Murthy was entrusted to look after the yogi during the days he was in Pune for the darshan. Now, when the yogi was seated next to Baba, Baba was sometimes, you know how, turn around and talk to one or another with his hands. And it is a custom when you come to the master, to God, for darshan, you also bring not only your heart's love, but an expression, like you give a rose to the beloved, in that a token from your heart. So they either bring a garland to put around Baba's neck, or they bring fruits or sweets. Very often Baba would touch whatever was presented, that means blessed with his touch, and returned for the giver to share among his own family to take it home. Otherwise, he would let them, and they would place it by his feet. So Baba told the yogi and Murthy sitting next to him, Baba said, now look, you be on the watch. You know, you need fruit. Your diet is mainly fruit. Now, when they offer fruit at my feet, you know, oranges, Baba made the suggestion, nice, juicy oranges. And when they put those, you just quickly swipe them like that and put them in that choli, a satchel that Murthy was carrying for the things of yogis, you know. So he said, now just swipe them and put them in there. Don't forget now. Keep your eyes open the moment that comes. And Baba's gesture was so lovely, his expression, you know, the twinkle in his eye looking mischievous, sort of, when nobody's looking, just swipe it up and put it. Yes, Baba, yes, yes. It was all delightful. Now, Baba's giving darshan. He's giving of himself so fully, individually, to each of those thousands that came to him, one by one. And yeah, and the others, including Yogi Sudananda Bharati, so involved in the atmosphere, watching all this, witnessing this love and this glorious occasion. And yet, they would miss when somebody put the oranges at Baba's feet. Baba, through all this, would snap his fingers quickly. Hey, sort of, what's the matter? You missed that. Why don't you pick that up? Put it in the satchel. What's the matter? You forgot? And so they fumble and they put it. And this not only happened once, this happened about three times. And each time Baba would catch their attention first. Baba was the one who would notice it first. Hurry up. Take that and put it in the satchel. And then Baba would continue to give out love and darshan to the others. So after a while, the poor yogi and Murthy were no longer thinking of Baba or the darshan or his lovers or what was happening. They were totally concentrating and meditating on oranges. So that before Baba would point out to them, they could, sometimes we felt that before the people really put the oranges down, both of them were staring at the oranges, quickly grabbed them, as if the oranges were going to run away. Put them in the satchel and sit. So you see, I think after a while, the poor yogi must have felt he wished he'd never seen oranges. He wished he'd not had a diet of oranges. He wished he hadn't written about oranges. He was fed up till here. All the time, Baba kept him on. Way of working, one of his ways of working is like that. Not by saying, don't have it when somebody wants something. All right, you want that? Have it. And you have such a surfeit of it that you don't want it anymore. But you have to continue to have it because Baba says, have it. Now it's from Baba. So that in the end you are sick of it and you don't want it anymore. Like the people who make chocolates in factories, I'm told they're allowed to eat whatever amount they want. And for the first few days it's marvelous. All those lovely Swiss chocolates. But after a while you can't stand the sight of chocolates. Bharati, he was also very eager to meet Elizabeth Patterson. And not only as a very close and dear disciple of Baba, but as the head of the Myrtle Beach Center. He had heard so much about the Myrtle Beach Center. He knew the rains that came down at the time. Everybody was seated in before Baba under the Shamianas in Guru Prasad at that darshan time. From nowhere, totally unexpected, and very heavy shower. It didn't last long, but when it came through the roof of the pandal, it drenched everybody. It was like they'd just come out from a heavy shower. So they were all sent inside. So all the Western women came inside the Guru Prasad Palace, the premises, where we women were, because we never participated in the darshan by being present outside. We were sort of behind the scenes. We could also watch from behind. We were there to see to anything that Baba would want, or anyway, we were back here. So they all came rushing in to us, and everybody had to be dressed. They all had to change. For some reason, we opened one of the Rani's cupboards through the caretaker, and for some reason, there were a lot of towels in there. So there were a lot of towels were distributed. Everybody was drying their hair, just like you'd come out from the bath, and with more towels and private corners to go dry and select clothes. But also, for some reason, we had taken men more clothes, far more clothes than we would have needed when we went from Mehrazad to Pune for the East-West Gathering Darshan. So we were able to bring out all these extra dresses and extra petticoats and extra blouses and extra saris, and each one was choosing. It was a marvelous a sight. You know, it's like in a bazaar. Shall we take this or shall we do this? But it was difficulty was the sizes. Not all the clothes would fit everybody. So I still remember one lady, Zarui Bejajan, a Baba lover from New York. No choli, no blouse could fit. But she wrapped herself in a sari so elegantly, she looked like a royalty. And so then when it came to Elizabeth, it was difficult for any of the clothes that we could give her to be of comfort for Elizabeth. So what to do? Then suddenly it turned out that long ago she had given her old silk dressing gown, which were darned in places, you know, ashram time dressing gown. When she left, she gave that to Rana. And Rana kept it. And for some reason, Rana took it to Pune that time. She said to herself, I'm sure I won't need it. Anyway, I'll take it. Who knows? So she'd taken the dressing gown. She said, wait, Elizabeth. I have your dressing gown. So there she was in that silk dressing gown. It was a sort of a mauve and dark brown stripes. Very elegant she looked. And, you know, they all had a sort of a paper rosette that they, those who had admission into the Guru Prasad compound for that darshan, had those rosettes. So here on the lapel of the dressing gown was this rosette. And then, when they all went out again to Baba and back to the pandal, Baba called Elizabeth. So Elizabeth climbed the steps to the dais where Baba's chair was, in that dressing gown, looking like a queen mother. And she came and she said, yes, Baba dear. And Baba said to Yogasudananda Bharati, you know, this is Elizabeth Patterson, head of that whole Myrtle Beach Center. And he was charmed, because this is how, as he had visualized her, with a sort of a uniform or some habit that was different from the ordinary dresses for one who was head of the Myrtle Beach Center. And it was so funny. Here was the yogi standing up in his ochre gown, and here Elizabeth in that silk dressing gown, and both bowing to each other. Yes, this is the yogi. Yes, this is. And Baba seated in between. How he arranged it. It was so just like Baba. She said to Baba, but you could have chosen any place on earth. You created all this. You had the whole universe at your disposal. And out of all the places, you go and choose Ahmednagar. Because Ahmednagar we used to call DDD, drab, dry, dusty. And Baba looked guilty. He scratched his chin, nodded his head. Yeah, I seem to have gotten into the habit of it, said Baba. I did it as Jesus. I did it as Muhammad. I've done it again. and Mara, eyes wide. And next time, I promise. It was so good. Because what Mara calls nice means green, luscious, especially as she loves the garden. You know, not dry, not dusty, where there's good rainfall. So next time, Baba promised. And Mara was so happy. And Baba left for the Mandali Hall. They brought him up on the lift chair. And then Mara looked at me and says, wait a minute. How are we going to know? I said, exactly. Next time, when we come, how are we going to know that he's done this because of that?
Well, next time.
I mean, one has had to put in so much work in order to make it what it is. The big trees, for instance, you have to dig pits so many feet wide, so many feet deep, and then fill it with the soil, because that's hard. It takes days and days to make that hole. And then you fill it with the soft earth, which you get from somewhere else. Neither the earth is right for the garden, nor the rainfall is enough, and the wind comes and dries up whatever little water that you put. Everything is very, very difficult. And he says, and Baba said, but that's the beauty of it. When you have had something easy, he put both thumbs up like that. It's no good. But you really appreciate it when you have things after it's been difficult, not just easy. So that's what makes matters of God all the more beautiful. What do you say to that? To Baba's words. That yes, what he's saying is true. It's right. He's right.
Is it true that Baba said that clock would be an automobile in its next life?
Right. No, that's not very kind. I thought it was going to be a camel. Don't you see the camel is right under the clock? I put a flower on the camel every day. Of seeing the name Ahmednagar, or hearing the name Ahmednagar. When I was little, and I could only come to Baba during my holidays, which were twice a year and very long holidays, but still, it wasn't all the time. So this coming with mother and the train, and even the wheels seemed to say, Baba, 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 Baba. Everything was different. All the colors were brighter. Everything was happier. And I was going to Baba. I was going to Mehrabad. So then the train would stop at Ahmednagar, but before you came into the station, from quite some distance, you saw this very highly elevated water tank that's there on the station, and in big, big, huge letters across, Ahmednagar. And when I saw that name, ah, oh, it was so thrilling, going to Ahmednagar. Or even when we were home, and if somebody came from Baba, if next best thing to being with Baba was having someone come home straight from Baba. I used to be so excited when my sister-in-law was sometimes sent home for some work for a couple of days or 3 days. Oh, and I didn't want to go to school during those days if it wasn't the weekend. I didn't want to miss a single day of not being with her and talking of Baba and hearing of Baba. So, but I wasn't so bright like the children. I mean, none of us were like the children of now. We were rather naive, trusting. So I thought the only thing I can do is pretend to mother that I've got a stomachache, so I can't go to school. But my mother was very shrewd. And so I said, Memo, and I acted up pretty well. I said, I've got a stomachache. My poor child, my poor baby. You've got a stomachache? All right, I'll give you some castor oil before you go to school, which means castor oil plus school. And I said, oh no, I hated castor oil. Every child did. But in our generation, as children, had castor oil at least once a month. This was terrible. So now I can't say no. So I did some more acting, and then after a while, and I said, Mama, my stomachache is much better. Oh, really? Oh, that's fine. Then I won't give you castor oil. You can go to school without the castor oil. What a relief. But I'd run home from school, just run to get there as fast as you could. One of the nicest experiences I had, when my sister-in-law, whose name was Korshit, there were two Korshits in the ashram all those years in Nasik, and before that in Mehrabad. Baba stayed a number of years in Nasik. In fact, when I first came to Baba Phukut, it was in Nasik, when I was 13 and a half years old. So, yeah. What was I going to say?
Two Korshits, your sister-in-law.
Yes, two Korshits in the ashram, both named Korshit. My sister-in-law was older than the Korshit you see in Mehrnazar compound. So she was known as Big Korshit, and she was known as Small Korshit. Motti Korshit, Nalli Korshit. So when Big Korshit would come home, I would be just so happy to have someone from there. So we would go to Baba Jan, which, as usual, my mother and I would go. We'd go at least once a week to Baba Jan's. So there was Korshit, Motti Korshit, my mother, and myself walking. It was very easy to walk in Pune in those days. Not much traffic, not so many people. We could practically walk in the middle of the road, and there were no electricity on the road. The roads were not lighted by electricity, but by oil lamps. There were those lampposts with little glass cases on top, which had an oil lamp in it. And a man would be seen each evening with a ladder under his arm, a bamboo ladder, going to each lamppost, leaning the ladder against it, climbing up, lighting that lamp, oil lamp, and walk up. So that the roads were lighted in waves, as it were. More light as you passed under the lamppost, little less light in between, and so on. Even the carriages, the horse carriages, had oil lamps to light their way. Now, Victoria comes into my story, so I describe it to you. You must have seen a Victoria is a horse carriage, which is quite different from a tonga. It's more like a lando, which nice seats where you can lean back. The hood can come down or up, and there's big horses usually for the big carriage.